Richard Elsner, Burton Elsner, and the Sugar Bowl. I got to thinking about some outstanding people that I have known in my life, and there are many. One in particular comes to mind today, and that is Richard Elsner. Richard did many things as a resident of Elbert. He was postmaster at one time, although not for very long, due to a change in politics. I think he managed the Russell Gates Mercantile at one time. During my lifetime, he owned and operated the Elbert Cash Grocery Store in Elbert for many years. The word cash is a misnomer here, as a lot of his business was credit and bartering. My parents always traded eggs for groceries, and when that didn't pay the bill, credit was used. I remember one time when my dad paid his bill for the year after he sold his wheat, and it was $300. During the flood of 1935, Richard lost a great deal of his inventory because the water backed up in the store. I remember my mom buying canned goods after that, with the label washed off so we didn't know what was for lunch until the can was opened. That building survived the flood, just barely, and stayed at its present location, but Richard's home nearer the creek was badly damaged and moved to higher ground during the restoration of the town. His son Burton was in the graduating class of Elbert High School that year, but of course there was no graduation as it was scheduled for that very day, and the school washed away. He was separated from his home and parents that day, and did not see his dad again until 2 days after the flood. He was taken by surprise, as his dad had turned completely gray-headed since he had last seen him. Richard restored the store, and had a small alcove on the side and near the front, that he used for storage. Burton installed a soda fountain in this room, and called it the Sugar Bowl. Burton and his girlfriend Barbara slipped off to someplace unknown, and were married, and they ran the fountain together. I remember going there with Dad and my Uncle Jesse, and the sodas were extra delicious. I don't know how many different kinds of ice cream treats they served, but there were many. The business flourished, but alas it was not to be. Barbara was underage, and her mother had the marriage annulled. The business was closed, and then came World War II. Burton enlisted in the Army in 1941, and completed pilot training in the Air Corps. He became a second lieutenant and co-pilot on a B-29. On its first bombing run, the plane was overloaded, and crashed, killing everyone on board but Burton. He was badly injured and spent many months in recovery. During that convalescence, he met his wife-to-be Nellie. They came to Elbert upon his discharge. Richard, his son, Burton, and Leon Soltz expanded the equipment business, which flourished for a few years, but gradually declined. Richard sold the grocery store, and he and Burton worked together on a farm they owned east of Elbert. Mrs. Elsner was a faithful attender of the Presbyterian Church, which was just across the street from the grocery store. Richard seldom, if ever, attended, stating that if he did, someone would ask him to open the store, and Sunday was his day off. When I enlisted in the Air Force in 1950, I had to supply a character reference from three individuals. Richard Elsner was one of those who provided that for me. June 10, 2020.
Hello, can you hear? Editor's note, the following was an entry in Dad's journal.
November 9, 1990. Kay told me today that Evelyn Lane is planning to burn or tear down the old Epler house. This, of course, makes me sad as it is a part of our heritage. The house is in very bad condition, I realize, and it could present a liability if someone should be hurt there. My great-granddad Daniel Epler built the house in the late 1800s by my estimate, and I have heard Dad tell many times of the joy he had as he visited his grandparents there. I also remember, as a little child, going to that house when Uncle Elmer lived there. One time, at what I think was Christmas dinner, we went in the old spring wagon that had a top on it and two seats. The burning of the Epler house. It was a beautiful winter morning, and I was returning from Calhan after purchasing cattle feed. The informational page from Elbert Fire Department indicated a controlled burn southwest of Elbert. I thought that it was the old Epler house, as later radio transmissions confirmed. John, in his official capacity of fire lieutenant, radioed the chief and asked that the fire be delayed until we could get there, and take some video. We arrived in time, and as I was taking the pictures, my mind went back to the times that I had known in that house as a small child. My grandmother's brother, Elmer, and his wife Phyllis, lived there at the time of my earliest memory. I remember going there for a meal, and I think it may have been on a Christmas day. At any rate, we went in an old spring wagon that had two seats and a top of some sort. I am sure that Dad used two horses, as he very seldom used one horse for anything, unless it was cutting corn with a sled. I tried to imagine what it must have been like when my great-grandparents lived there. Granddad remodeled the house, building onto the existing structure. I thought of how he would have hated to see the disrepair the house had fallen into, and then I realized that he probably wouldn't really care that much. Grandad was an opportunist, always looking for something better, always looking for greener pastures, so to speak. His daughter Mary, my grandmother, would describe him as a drifter, who was never satisfied. She was a homebody, and did not share his wanderlust. My mind quickly returned to the situation at hand, as I saw the first trace of smoke go into the air on the south side of the house, where the fire had been started. I watched as the smoke grew blacker and larger in volume, then the increased heat brought out the flames, and the smoke diminished somewhat. The house was probably fully engulfed in about 20 minutes. The front porch was the first part to collapse and burn completely, quite a bit before any of the rest of the house was gone. The roof on the main part of the house was the next to go. The heat grew much more fierce with the falling of the roof. At one point, we were driven back as far as the barn by its intensity. As the new part collapsed and burned, it became apparent that the old original structure had been hewn logs and mortar. This part was well built and of heavy material, as it took considerably longer to burn. I thought of the many hours of work that had gone into the original structure. Had these logs been hewn by hand? Perhaps they were a product of Gomer's Mill, or another area sawmill of the early days. Where did all the flat rocks come from for the foundation? And the stone part of the house on the south side? Is that why we don't see many of that type of rock around now? It has been said that this was a stage stop at one time. Maybe that is true. I think about that, and imagine the venison hanging in the stone part of the house. There would be butter and cheese too, and some canned goods, and other things of a perishable nature. It would be cool there. The pitcher pump stands in the corner, over the hand-dug well that supplies water for the household, and the weary, thirsty traveler, the dipper used by all, hanging on a nail close beside. There are springs that supply water for the horses and other livestock. Water was abundant in those days, at this spot anyway. It was a good location on the bend of Running Creek, whose headwaters were a few miles south, and also on a draw that came from the east, with drainage of nearly a mile. Now I realize that the fire is burning down, and the old house is nearly gone. This place that has been so much a part of my heritage is going with a finality. The ranch is no longer owned by anyone in the Epler or Gresham families, and probably never will be. The old house, that had so many things to tell, is rapidly passing into obscurity. Most of the memories are forgotten, most of its stories will never be told. It is the end of an era. Soon a bulldozer will blot out any sign of the work and hardship, the joy and happiness, that took place on this spot. I take one last look, and one last sweep with my video, and I consign it to the inevitable, and go home. February 2, 1991.
Hello, can you hear
me? World War II memories. Editor's note, the following is from Dad's journal, written December 6, 1990. There are certainly a lot of bad things going on, for this is supposed to be a happy time of the year. At least, word received today of the hostages being released in Iraq is good news. I hope it is true, and they are all really home for Christmas. My mind goes back to this time of the year in 1941, on December 7th when we were attacked at Pearl Harbor. I remember the day very well, and how frightened I was. I was sure that we would be next, and that I would be killed, and never grow up. I remember voicing these fears to my dad, and though he reassured me that it wasn't so, I know that he really didn't know what to say, and how profoundly affected he was with the news. I can't remember if he cried that day, but I know he shed tears many times during the war as he listened to the news. One time in particular was on D-Day, the day of the Normandy invasion. I couldn't really understand his tears, but he realized how many lives would be lost that day. This is the time of year that we celebrate the time that the angels proclaimed, peace on earth, goodwill toward men. I guess that this will never really come to pass, until he comes again. Editor's note, Dad related the following memory of Pearl Harbor to me in a conversation. The family had gone to visit Earl and Helen Ramey, to see a new house they had built on the Ramey farm, east of Elbert. When we came home, we learned of the Pearl Harbor attack. I recall gathering around the radio in the living room listening to the report. The battery on the old radio was almost dead, and we could barely hear the broadcast.
Hello, can you hear?
Courtship and marriage. Editor's note, Mom and Dad knew each other their whole lives. Mom often mentioned that they were listed next to each other on the cradle roll at the Elbert Christian Church. They attended the Elbert Christian Church through their childhood with their families, and would have seen each other weekly. Incidentally, they continued to attend and serve at the Elbert Christian Church faithfully their whole lives. To hear them tell the story, they didn't pay much attention to one another as they were growing up. Dad attended school at the Lincoln School and Elbert High School, Mom attended school in Elizabeth, Colorado and was a year ahead of him. An interest developed later, however. The interest sparked a romance that lasted over 65 years, and never wavered, for better or worse, richer or poorer, in sickness and in health. Warren and Helene Gresham made quite a team. The following are some of Dad's recollections.
Hello, can you hear?
Our courtship begins. I was on my way overseas. I was home on leave before I went. I went to a dance in Elizabeth with Alan. Helene was there and I danced with her several times throughout the evening. I really wanted to take her home, but I knew Alan had that darn beer in the car, and I didn't want to put up with that. I don't even know why it was there, we weren't drinking it, maybe he was, but I wasn't anyway, I was dancing with Helene. Anyway, that's why I didn't ask to take her home. Well, then I went back home and was telling Mom about it. She said, oh, she has a ring, she's wearing a diamond ring. So, I thought, my gosh, she never said anything about anyone else. But anyway, I thought she was engaged to some other guy. I labored under that assumption for a long time. Right after that, I went overseas and didn't come back home for 18 months. We did not correspond while I was gone, but my mother kept pretty close track of her. I don't remember how I found out, maybe Helene told Mom, but I knew before I came back that she wasn't engaged. The ring was a diamond from her mother. After graduating from college, she went to work in the store, and waited for me to come home. That really wasn't so, but it made a good story. She laughed about it later, said the ring kept others at bay till she had what she wanted. Anyway, I came home from the service and she was working at the Elizabeth Mercantile Company, and I stopped in there, under the pretext of buying some Christmas cards. I bought some cards, and we visited for a while. I had to stop two or three different times before I got up nerve enough to ask her for a date, but I finally did. Our first date was the 19th of December. I was still in the service, but I was waiting to be discharged. Dad had this old 42 Ford and of course, Alan drove it like there were no worries at all. We double-dated that night in that car. I took Mom and he took this other gal. She never surfaced at all in the back seat, so Mom didn't know who was back there. But, the car broke down, I don't remember what happened. So we had to go wake Grandpa up and borrow his car so we could come back home. They were living there in the Springs at the time, so we borrowed his car and got them back home. So that was our first date. Editor's note, Mom recorded in her journal that they had a long courtship. A couple months, after they had been out together four or five times, he asked her to marry him and gave her an engagement ring. Mom said, everyone knew they would be married, Dad's mom was in favor, and Aunt Bernice had decided she was the girl for him.
Hello, can you hear?
On our 37th anniversary. Well, here we go starting on 38. This is a very significant date in our lives, because as you know, I didn't really start to live until that date in 1954. I thought of getting a card at times, but never when I was at a place where I could. This little note will have to do this time, I guess. I am very fortunate and happy to have you. Uncle Harvey told me one time that you were a person who would bring out the best in any man. I think you have done that. What I have accomplished can be related to your support and faith in my abilities. Thank you for giving me three fine boys, who in turn gave us two and one half daughters-in-law, and three fine grandchildren. Editor's note, Tom was engaged at the time. If a successful marriage were based solely on material things and financial success, some would say we didn't make it. But I am quite happy with what I have, and all I really want is to have enough that we can live on. The house is comfortable, and I like it because you make it a home. Let's celebrate and go for another 37. I love you. Warren. June 20th, 1991.
Hello, can you hear?
Mother's Day card. Year unknown. While in King Supers, I noted a card I should buy, if I don't all forget, I'm that kind of a guy. I found them okay, but they all look so mushy, I love my wife, but hate to be gushy. Oh well, it's early, I'm not in a bind, I'll look around for the everyday kind. So on Friday after work to the store I did go, and there were the cards all neat in a row. The everyday kind was there if you please, birthday, sympathy, and sorry you sneeze. Alas, I've struck out, and all out of time, Mother's Day greetings are left to this rhyme. Happy Mother's Day, dear wife, I love you.
Hello, can you hear?
Memories. The Elbert Post Office.
April 29, 1960, started out about the same as usual. The weather was cloudy, with some low-lying clouds and fog. I started my milk truck route shortly after daylight, and headed east of Elbert. The route took me east of Calhoun, and a stop at the gas station in Calhoun, before continuing to make pickups, and arriving back in Elbert about noon. This was pancake day in Elbert, and I knew that Helene would be helping with the serving at the community hall, so it was my first stop. She met me at the door, and excitedly told me that some people from the post office were looking for me, and wanted me to come there. I knew that my name had been submitted for the job opening as postmaster there, by the Republican County Committee, headed by then Sheriff Roy Brown, but I had heard nothing further about it. There, I was met at the door by a Mr. Walsh, postal inspector, who told me his presence there was to install me as acting postmaster. Myra Oren, the present postmaster, was transferring to the rural route, also effective that day. There I was, with a job half done, a truckload of milk to be taken to Larkspur, following some more pickups. Brother Alan came to my rescue, and finished the route for me that day. The problem was not solved. What about the next day, and the next week? The installation proceeded, and I was duly sworn in as the new postmaster, albeit acting, and took accountability for the stamp stock. Hap Moore, the previous rural carrier, was happy indeed to be retiring, and Myra was happy to be taking his job. The carrier job then, was only about 3 hours a day, so she felt she had a good thing going. I guess I was happy, very bewildered, and uncertain how to handle everything. I received no instruction on the job that day. The next day, Sunday, I drove my truck route as usual, and told the guys at the creamery of all that had happened. A very good friend, Daryl Bell, was running the creamery at that time, and he told me of a person, Stan Trueblood, who might be interested in buying the route. His father-in-law ran a bulk truck line, and was willing to help Stan to get started. Alan continued to run the truck for me the next week, and I started negotiation to sell to Stan. I sold for only a little more than the truck itself was worth, and accepted a partial payment to close the deal. Stan took over immediately, and within a matter of months, paid me entirely. Thus closed that chapter of my life, and started the next one, which was a complete change, but I know it was God's direction. Monday morning, May 1st, my first day on the job at the post office. I had no idea what I was doing. I remember my first sale was to a lady I did not know, and it was for only a 4-cent stamp. I was so nervous, and she graciously pretended she didn't notice. I finally got things figured out, and continued in that job for 39 years. I retired on the same day of the month, April 29, 1999. Today, I look back on those 60 years, and realize how truly blessed I have been. God gave me a wonderful woman for a wife of 65 years, and a family of which I am especially proud. True, there have been losses and heartaches, but all in all, God is good. April 29, 2020.
Hello, can you hear?
Sheep raising. I am sitting here thinking that I should write something, but not really having any ideas. My gaze wanders to the wall above my typewriter, and I look at the picture that Helene has hung there recently. There are three boys, working at trying to feed an orphan lamb. One is holding the lamb while the other is holding the bottle. The other boy is holding the twin, who is finished drinking apparently as there is an empty bottle on the floor, next to the lantern. This could have been our boys, except the ages don't quite match. Anyway, my mind goes back to those days when our boys were small, and we had sheep on this ranch. Our first attempt at the sheep business came in 1965, I think. We responded to an ad in the newspaper, and bought 10 old ewes at a little ranchette, in what is now the town of Aurora. The guy said they were bred, and we hoped he was right, but it was too soon to tell much about it. I borrowed a buck from a neighbor, just in case. The ewes were old and mixed breed. One of them was an old small ewe that we called Granny. She raised a set of twins, with a little help from a bottle. Almost always ewes of this type are culls, and they were sold for a reason. One of them was a real pretty black-faced ewe, not as old as the rest. We thought she should be a good mother, as she had a good bag. She lambed and had triplets, then promptly tromped them to death. I guess we found out why she had been sold. In spite of the poor quality, that was the nucleus of our herd. We added to these every year, by purchase as well as keeping some of our ewe lambs. Our herd grew until we had 125 head of ewes in the early part of the 1970s. They proved to be profitable. We used to always figure that we would have the sale of the wool to pay our real estate taxes. Shearing was something else. The first few years, we always hired someone to do that. Then Jim attended sheep shearing school in Rifle, Colorado, and we started shearing our own. I learned the hard way. I first learned to use the hand shears, and then we graduated to electric shears. My back always got to hurting so bad, that I couldn't do a lot of them in one day. However, I have sheared as many as 25 in one day. That is nothing for a sheep shearer, but a lot for me. Editor's note, the sheep raising in 1965 was not Dad's first experience with sheep. He and Dave Pottinger had a sheep operation in the late 1950s. They kept their flock at Dad's grandfather's farm. I was not very old, so I don't remember much about it. One thing was memorable, though. The old barn had a large hay loft, and in order to make more room to shelter the sheep, a ramp was built so the sheep could move to the loft. I remember following the sheep up that ramp. That made an impression on this preschool boy.
Hello, can you hear?
A part of the Russell Gates building. I stand at the counter of the post office, and watch as the tractor and semi-trailer come into town, and unload the Caterpillar tractor. It is just across the street, at the back of the community hall. Tomorrow, the operator will doze down the cement walls remaining there, level the ground, and slope the area from the street to the building. That part of the old Russell Gates building, that stood over these ruins, was torn down during the late 1960s. It was made of wood, as opposed to the brick part of the building which was much larger, and is still standing. The IOOF Lodge owned the building at this time, and they offered the lumber to anyone who would do the work. The building was no longer in use, as the fire department had moved to the old bank building. The building was two-story. The top part was used for bean storage by the Russell Gates store, and also in later years, when Richard Elsner rented the building in conjunction with the Elbert Cash store. Richard bought beans from local farmers, storing them there in that building until they could be shipped to other markets. He stored some machinery here, as he also sold McCormick Deering farm equipment, later to become International Harvester. For many years, during the time Elsner used the upstairs part of the building, Elbert County used the bottom part of the building as a garage for county equipment. They did some repair work on machinery there. In 1954, the Elbert Fire Department was organized. The bottom part of the building was partitioned off to make a place for the fire truck that would protect from freezing temperature. A well was driven in the room, 16 feet in depth, to provide water for the fire truck. This doesn't seem like much of a water supply for a fire department, but the truck only held 150 gallons. At the west end of the upper story, on the east side of the building, there was a door large enough for a team and wagon to enter. A dirt ramp led from the street to this entrance. On the east side of this ramp, was a retaining wall of cement. This wall still stands today, the only part of the building still in its original state. I guess that there is only so much that can be said about a retaining wall, but since it is a part of history that still stands, and will be no more after tomorrow, some comment seems appropriate. Evenly spaced along the wall are iron rings about 4 inches in diameter, anchored in the cement and used as a hitching post. One has to imagine those days, when there were few automobiles, and picture in his mind the horses and wagon pulled up there and tied. The driver had gone into the building, to get his check for the beans that were just unloaded. We seem too intent these days, to make things new. To modernize, and in so doing, we destroy those things of history. Then we wonder why we know so little of the past. This old hitching post serves absolutely no purpose, but it has been something to see each day as I look out the window of the post office. I have thought many times about the use of those rings hanging there. It seems that it is a part of the old and familiar that will be no more. I realize how many of these things are happening now at this time of my life, and wonder if it is really true that the best is yet.